Welcome to Bittersweet Symphony. I'm Cliona Ryan, a violinist with the Irish Chamber Orchestra, and I'm going to be chatting to friends and colleagues to find out what happened to them when a global pandemic hit and the music suddenly stopped. Today, I'm going to be chatting with Lizzie McLaren, incredible violinist and associate principal of second violins in the National Symphony Orchestra in Dublin. Lizzie shares her bitter memories of being so far from home, sweet memories of incredible musical moments, including a pop-up impromptu performance for our very own president in his front garden, the Phoenix Park, and bittersweet friends who were isolated and thus were welcomed in to the bosom of her own family. This is Lizzie McLaren.
I've got kind of, you know, a lot of fond memories of the lockdown. But I've also got sort of kind of not so nice memories as well. So like I say, there's this little highlights kind of stick out along the way.
Yeah.
No, I didn't mind. And I even just this morning, my husband went and got us a coffee from our neighbour next door. He sells out the front. And I said, well, actually, Martin, what was your bitter memories of lockdown? What were your sweet memories and stuff? And I never asked him.
Oh.
And I think if you asked the kids, I think there was a lot of good things. We lived in our little bubble and it was, you know, kind of cozy and stuff. So
yeah. And can you take me to March 2020? And what was going on for you then?
Well, we were just working, just carrying on as normal. And we were recording. Oh, no, we were going to do Apollo 13. And
Lizzie, we were sitting next to each other.
Yes, yes.
I think we were, so it was March 12th, wasn't
it? Yeah.
We knew that there was going to be an announcement that morning and we had our morning coffee break.
Yes, that's right. And we were all sitting going, what's going to happen? And we had just heard that Tom Hanks had got COVID and he's in the film. And we were kind of going, oh my God, isn't that weird? And I think that the camera at Ireland just got back from France or something.
Yeah.
And we were all kind of going, oh God, a lot of us felt uncomfortable with people that have just flown in.
Yeah.
I think we all knew it was coming. And actually I had arranged to go out with Melanie and Dara. When the rehearsal stopped, we just went, oh, what do we do? And I said, well, do you want to just go out anyway? We went, yeah, why not? So we went off, we went into some nice bar in town. I was having porn star martinis and it was all weird because we all already were sitting apart. We all kind of sat in this big booth and we were already sitting kind of far apart. But town was so quiet. It was so weird. There was hardly anybody there. The streets were really empty and it was just so odd. And then we went, all right, well, I'll see you later then. And it was like, well, what do we do now? It was just sort of kind of odd. Well, when are we going to see each other? And at the time, I think we all thought, oh, this is a bit of a laugh. We're getting a day off, da-da-da-da. And, of course, little did we know that we'd be off for however long. And it was just sort of weird, you know.
It was September, wasn't it, till the Symphony Orchestra went back?
Yeah. So I found, you were talking about bitter and sweet things. I found that really hard. That time from March until September, you know, when you're just sort of wound up and you're running around doing stuff the whole time, you find that quite hard to kind of just stop.
Mm.
And I suddenly realized, I kind of just went, but I need to play some music. Who am I without my violin? You know? And I just went, ah! And so yeah, it took a long while for us to get back, but when we went back, it wasn't nice. I didn't enjoy it at all. And I was wanting to enjoy it. I was wanting to be happy, and in a way I was. And it was lovely to see everybody and just have, you know, a bit of chat and stuff. But because we were told, you know, stay away, you know, don't come close. And it just felt really unnatural. It wasn't a normal experience at all. And wearing the masks, you couldn't communicate. And you know yourself about sharing a desk. It's all about the crack and the chat and you know, the shared experience.
You like the odd rude joke or
maybe one or two
on the music and such, Lizzie.
Well, just a little bit, you know. But you know, it just makes the day go a bit quicker and just have a laugh. And you know, I think our job can be so intense and sort of serious all the time, but you just need something to sort of lighten it up. And, you know, and that's just the way I work. Maybe it doesn't suit everybody. But I remember maybe a couple of weeks in, and I remember looking around everybody. I know, because you can only see their eyes, everybody's head was down, their eyes were down. There didn't seem to be an energy in the room. Everybody was just like down. It was really down. And I thought, God, this is really sad. We should be happy to be back. And it was lovely to play music, but it was all in the wrong kind of way. And it felt so tense, and it was so hard to play. Everybody was so far away, and, you know, you couldn't hear, you couldn't get any information. It was all that kind of stuff, as you know. It's just really hard. Nice. And then everybody felt kind of on edge. Like if a conductor took his mask off, everybody, like this, you know, it was all this fear and kind of anxiety. And it was like, oh, you know. So when you came out into the car park at the end of a concert, it was like everybody just went, phew.
Yeah.
The best bit of the day was the chat in the car park at the end of the day. You could be normal, you know.
Yeah.
And, but in a way, you know, I was obviously very grateful that I was working.
Yeah.
And that we were doing music and we were getting paid. I mean, Jesus, how lucky were we?
Previous to March, how were things, you know, how did things feel for you and your work-life balance and family and everything? And
I think we had quite a good balance. We've always managed to kind of, you know, make decisions together. So my husband was an accountant. So when we had kids, he decided, look, what's the point in me working to pay for somebody else to look after my kids? He said, this is just mad, you know. And he said, I don't like my job anyway. I'm just going to stay at home. And we managed, you know, I don't know how, but we kind of managed to cobble along. And I think we've always been quite good at managing our time and making sure that, you know, we're together as a unit. So,
yeah.
But you do, I suppose, you know, everybody feels a little bit on a treadmill. But so I suppose that was one of the best things, that suddenly your life just stopped.
Yeah.
And there was time to breathe, and there was time to kind of like, oh, so we've got time to do yoga in the morning.
Yeah. Were you able to pick a specific bitter memory, or what came up for you when you were thinking about that?
Oh, I suppose that's kind of hard to talk about because it involves work.
Yeah.
Because I think all my bitter things did come from work. Like I can't think of anything negative about COVID or the lockdown. The only thing I could say would be, you know, I couldn't go home and see my mum.
Well,
That was obviously the big thing. I remember asking work if I could go home for a vaccine because I'm still registered in the UK. And then I needed some time off, and they wouldn't give me the time off. And I found that really hard, being told, you know, you have to stay here, you cannot go. And I thought, well, actually, I can go. You can't really stop me. And, you know, as long as I do the tests or the quarantine or whatever it is I needed to do, I found that really hard. Just because, you know, you could hear your mum being upset on the phone, and, you know, she was looking forward to seeing you. That was the probably, you know, kind of not nice thing that happened, I think.
Yeah.
And just losing that freedom. The other thing that I found hard, just watching the kids, like obviously we're very close and we felt very safe and we were very secure and all that. That was fine. I think it was just seeing them not being able to go and see their pals. You know, they really missed their friends. I mean, and I was sort of worried in case that would have an impact long term, but it didn't, you know. I don't think that there was anything else really that I can think of. Just like the general kind of the whole work thing just felt so unnatural, and it still does.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the hardest things I found in a concert was there was no applause. And I kind of went, God, does my ego really need applause all the time? But, you know, you kind of go, I didn't realise how much I needed that and how much music was part of my life and or how important it was. And that's what kind of why I did all those little concerts at the front.
You also did an impromptu concert for the president.
The Prez, me and the Prez.
Tell me about the concerts at the front and then tell me about the concert for the Prez.
So, Cayman Gilmore moved in next door. have you ever heard of the band Ye Vagabonds?
Oh, yeah.
So they live across the road from me. And I think one of them moved out and came and moved in. He just literally moved in for about 2 weeks, and then lockdown happened, and he just went, oh shit, you know, what am I going to do now? Anyway, he just texted me and he said, would you fancy doing some duets in the front park? So we live in a square, and there's a little fenced off park with trees, cherry blossom trees and plants. So we went out one Sunday about 1 o'clock or something, bashed through some duets and bits and pieces. But it was freezing cold. I remember my fingers, after 5 minutes, were totally frozen. But then quite a few neighbours just came out to listen. And then I think after that, then he moved away. But then I thought, well, we could carry on doing this, you know. So Mary Barnicott and Kieran Crilly live around the corner. So they came around a couple of times, and the weather was getting better then. You know, it was getting warmer. I'm trying to think. Oh, my friend Brenda. So Brenda Malloy, she is an Irish harpist. She lives up the road, and we played lots of lovely duets, you know, sort of Robbie Burns songs and Irish tunes and stuff. So that was very relaxed and calm as well. So, you know, just doing little things for the community, it was nice, you know. And the thing for the president was, I was taking the kids for walks and cycles in the Phoenix Park. So we'd pass the Arras every day, and my husband said, well, he's your patron, you know, you should use this. And I was going, yeah, actually, he was very proactive in lockdown. He still is. He's doing loads of things online. So I got the kids to write him a letter, and they wrote him a poem, and they drew a picture of trees and deers and things like this. And they said, my mummy plays in the symphony orchestra. What is your favourite piece of music? And lo and behold, he wrote back to them. And we were so excited because we got this letter with the golden harp on the back of the envelope. And we were kind of, oh my God, the president has written back to us. And he said, well, you could tell your mother that my favourite piece is Leonard Cohen, Come Healing. So I got Rihanna, who you know, he lives in Castleknock, and Hilary.
Flute and bassoon.
Yeah, flute and bassoon. And we all had to be within 5 kilometres at that time. So it was good enough. We'd all get to the Arras, and we chose a really sunny, hot day. So we were having a picnic and a flask of tea. I said, well, why don't we just send him a picture of us, you know, just for a laugh. So we tweeted him and said, oh, by the way, there's some musicians here from the National Symphony Orchestra. And so this park ranger came up to us because he saw this crowd of people arriving, and what are you doing? And I said, well, actually, we're from the National Symphony Orchestra. We're here to play for the president. He said, well, that's fine then. That's grand. Sure, off you go. As long as you're not starting a riot. I said, no, we're not starting a riot. No. And then this guy came down. He's the PA of the president. And he said, we got your tweet and he'll be down in 10 minutes. He's just on a phone call just now. And we went, all right, okay. But then he came down and he brought the dogs and he was chatting away to us and we played. And he was sort of swinging his hat, singing along like this, you know, and it was so lovely. Like, you couldn't have asked for a nicer moment. But someone tweeted it and it just went a bit mad, you know.
So you went viral, Lizzie.
We did, but it was by accident, but it was kind of a good accident. But again, that's what I kind of think about music. It was there to bring joy. It was there to bring, you know, a bit of happiness to people's lives.
Which is your sweetest memory, Lizzie?
Oh, I'd say that's pretty amazing. When I look back on it, it was just a bit mad because, you know, Rihanna and Hilary just kind of went, yeah, we'll come along and play. And we said, well, what will we wear? Will we wear black? Oh, yeah, why not? And we thought, thank God we did, because we looked kind of respectable for the press. We're kind of going. But it was all kind of because they're so good at joining in and having a laugh. And that was just kind of nice, you know. It was just a happy day. You know, it just felt nice that something that the kids had done, that they had written this poem, and then all that came out of it, you know. I thought that was a nice sort of outcome. Yeah. I said, well, look there, girls, the power of a letter, and, well, the power of, you know, the president's social media as well. So that was quite handy.
Were there other sweet memories that you thought about?
I suppose that the second lockdown, I suppose that was in the Christmas, wasn't it, in sort of January around about that time. I felt really happy then because, well, not happy, but it was, again, because it was cold outside, we had the fire on, we were cosy, we were watching Christmas films, all that kind of thing. But we'd also just moved back at home. I had to move out for a couple of months to get our house done up And it was just so lovely being home, even though our house was a mess. Like, we needed to paint, we needed to unpack. It was manky, you know, but it didn't matter because we were home. And the girls, they both got their bedroom each. Yeah. So I think I really enjoyed that lockdown because, again, it was sort of, we were enveloped, we were kind of cozy, we were safe. You know, we had all our new windows and all the light coming in. And I was going, well, even if it's a bit of a mess, we're here and we're cozy and stuff. So I like that. But that's, I suppose, another thing I liked beforehand. I suppose I phoned my mum maybe 2 or 3 times a week at most, you know. But now we phone every day. So I think that's another nice thing, that whatever happens, even if it's for 5 minutes or for half an hour, we phone every day.
Would you say that you're closer with your mum, or you're more involved with each other now than you would have been before?
I think we were always kind of close, but I think she depended on me a lot more because she was stuck at home with my uncle and my brother. And they're quite oddballs at the best of time, you know. So I think she felt like she had someone else to talk to.
Yeah.
She doesn't drive. She doesn't get out very much. So I think for her, it was an outlet. You could tell that the strain was kind of taking its toll sometimes. But again, you know, she went up to Orkney halfway for the sort of winter lockdown. And because Orkney had very little, well, had no COVID, I think it was zero COVID there, she was out and about every day and she loved that. So she had a great lockdown. And she really appreciated all the little things we did for her, you know.
Had you had the opportunity to support her before? Did she ever need you before in the way that she needed you then?
Not really. Like, I suppose she is pretty independent, apart from she can't drive.
Yeah.
And she's not really good with paperwork or, you know, dealing with phone calls. So when I went home, there was a lot of that to sort out for her. Even just getting a COVID test, not a COVID test, but getting her vaccine. Because she had no phone, mm-hmm. she couldn't, or internet or thing, you know, she couldn't book all these things. Oh. So I was on the phone, phoning up on her behalf. Because I had a bit more time on my hands, I could make these phone calls for her and stuff.
In terms of the bitter part, was it hard to be away from Scotland for that long?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Even last year, we were told, you know, you had to inform work where you were going on holiday. And I found that quite an infringement of my personal time. Like, I was going to go and, look, this is my annual leave. Why do I have to tell you where I'm going, you know? And I have a whole month off, which is amazing. But I could only go for 10 days because of the quarantine. So even that was like, so that, I just felt that really hard. And, you know, 10 days when you've not seen someone for so long, it just flies by, you know, too quickly. So this year was amazing. I took an extra week off. So we went over for 5 weeks.
Amazing.
That was just about the right time. because we had time to go and see our friends or, you know, see different people and stuff. So I still had loads of time at home.
Yeah.
You know, my mum writes a blog every day for her garden, but it's very little about gardening. It's just about her life and, you know, what happens. So I got the kids to write a blog, give her a night off. And of course, the kids wrote one each and they were hilarious. They're so, and of course, my mum was so annoyed because they got more likes than her, you know, and more comments and stuff.
And Lizzie, what was it like to think of a bittersweet memory? Were you able to pick a bittersweet memory?
I was trying to sort of think about that. There was two friends that I felt particularly worried about during lockdown. And, well, not worried, but, you know, I was sort of concerned for them because, one, they don't have any family nearby and they were single. Well, they are single. And so I was kind of sort of concerned, you know, I was always on the phone to them or emailing or sending funny texts or whatever. And I felt, you know, because we're kind of on our own, you know, just the four of us, it was nice to sort of bring them into our bubble. So I was kind of worried about them. But I think actually, in a way, it's come around the full circle. And we've stayed, obviously, way more in contact now as well. And again, say beforehand, you might not have had as much time to chat or, you know, you're all busy running around doing stuff. But when you stop and you think and you kind of go, well, that person there, you know, they would appreciate just going for a walk in the park or going for a coffee or whatever. No, I think there's a lot of good things that have happened. I suppose I feel for people like all the freelance musicians. Like I stay in contact with Felamy quite a lot, and I can really hear it in his voice, the lack of the work, just what am I going to do with my life kind of thing.
Yeah.
Everybody's retraining and doing amazing things. And like Felamy's the same. Like he's just built a whole garden up in Donegal. And would you have done podcasts? I don't know.
I think in many professions, it's completely normal to keep learning, to do night classes and this and that and the other. But we don't really get to do that because we have irregular working lives. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I always feel like if I do have a spare hour to myself, it's like, oh, I need to practice. Why don't I just go and do some yoga or learn how to sew or something, you know? It's just like, oh, practice.
Yeah, there's always more practice to be done.
Always.
The practice won't go anywhere, Lizzie. It'll always be there.
Never, never. It'll always be there.
Thanks so much to Lizzie for sharing her thoughts and experiences. I loved hearing about the coziness and the closeness of her family, about this little letter that just became this incredible moment, a national moment, and of that family warmth being extended to welcome in new members of a family, friends that have become a part of their hearth and home. If you're enjoying the podcast, keep listening, but don't forget you can always like and subscribe, and then you'll never miss an episode. You can follow on Instagram at ryan.cliana, on Twitter at Cliana Violin, and on Facebook at Bittersweet Symphony Podcast, where you can share your own bitter, sweet and bittersweet memories using the hashtag Bittersweet Symphony. Thanks so much for listening, and until the next one.